So, we all know what that symbol means, right? That's right. Time for a long overdue session with moi. Let me once again, I seem to be doing this a lot lately. Apologize for my absence. I just have so much stuff going on around here. I can't seem to catch a break from house repairs to air conditioning going out to whatever. So, for whatever reasons, again, I apologize, and if I don't do these as often as some of you would like, I'm really sorry. I'm doing what I can do, given my constraints at the moment. Back to the topic at hand, however, as most of you would recognize, that sort of classic riff is a sort of a Chuck Berry thing. Well, it's not sort of a Chuck Berry thing. It is a Chuck Berry thing. Most of folks in this more modern times probably don't really remember or appreciate Chuck Berry because, you know, when you think of guitar heroes, you know, you think of people like Clapton and Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page and, you know, Eddie Van Halen, you know, and all of those folks are certainly guitar heroes. But what you have to look at, I think, are the roots of some of our current riffs that we are so familiar with and we're not even aware of that permeate most of our songs. What Chuck Berry really invented back in the day with Maybelline, I believe, which was like, I don't know, 55, something like that, 1955. I don't remember the exact year. But, I mean, this is a guy who came up, you know, while he came up from a fairly middle-class family, as most of you know, Chuck Berry is black. And back in the day, that was not the most advantageous thing to be. So this is a man who caught a lot of flack for what he did. And purely upon, you know, his ethnicity, because obviously it wasn't because he wasn't coming up with something new. So I think what happens with a lot of times when folks are not of the popular race, creed, color, denomination, sexual orientation, or gender, they often get either maligned or overlooked. You know, at least we forget, you know, this has been something that's been going on forever and a day, some form of discrimination or prejudicial behavior, you know, whether it's women, blacks, you know, homosexuals, you know, folks who weren't Christian, folks who weren't Orthodox, you know, women versus men, you know, you name it, you know, we can come up with an excuse to why we don't like it and why those folks shouldn't be allowed the same types of privileges that the mainstream population enjoys. Be that as it may, that's my second part of this podcast, so let me not get ahead of myself. So most of you don't really recognize Chuck Berry as a quote-unquote guitar hero per se, and you know, while I don't think anybody would argue that he's, you know, a huge technician, this is a guy who invented a genre, really. And if it weren't for Chuck Berry, there would not be this, what we call rock and roll or rock or, you know, any of this stuff. And I thought one way to kind of demonstrate that, if I can pull this off about overdriving the fitful recording equipment I'm using at the moment, I wanted to play some riffs from some songs that most of you have heard, particularly you classic rock freaks out there, and just name a few songs that I won't play that you have heard what I have commonly referred to as the Chuck Berry Chunka Chunka. So for those of you who don't know what that is this. Right, and I call that the chunka, 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 you know, one's muting the string and one's letting it play open. You folks have heard that or some variation of that in more things than I can possibly enumerate in the time that we have. This is a riff that has been used everywhere from, you know, T-Rex and Bang a Gong, you know, where you hear the, you know, the, you know, that which permeates an entire tune, you know, to things like this. Mm-hmm. many of you may or may not recognize as Bachman Turner Overdrive's Taking Care of Business. And yes, it is pronounced Bachman, not Bachman, much to my chagrin. But hey, Randy can pronounce his name any way he wants, speaking of Guitar Heroes. So to anywhere from that to... Right, the intro to the Georgia Satellites tune, you know, to the Stones' Midnight Rambler, to, let's see if I can pull this one off. To Eric Clapton's Tell the Truth with Derek and Dominoes, you know, to Creedence's Proud Mary, you know, to Warren Zevon's Werewolves of London, where you hear the... Right? Even to Steppenwolf's Born to Be Wild, you know, where you get this real thick... which is a variation of the Chunka Chunka, right? All of those to, you know, Bad Company's Can't Get Enough. The right? All of those are Chunka Chunkas, every single one of those, right? So, I mean, there are just so many examples of those. So the Beatles Get Back, the Stones Star Star, Bad Bad Leroy Brown, you know, Fool for the City by Foghat, If the House is a Rockin', you know, Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo by the late, great Johnny Winter, who made it famous, although the author of that is not Johnny Winter. Many of you may or may not know that. It's Rick Derringer, who's the author of the song. And then, you know, starts off with the... Right? So, you know, Beatles Revolution, Clapton's Lay Down Sally, to, you know, the end of Freebird when they're doing the jam. I mean, all of that stuff, all of those are all examples of Chuck Berry, the Chunka Chunkas, even to, you know, the middle, the... All of that stuff. There is hardly a band around, you know, Tulsa Time, for God's sake. You know, there's hardly a song on artists who can't owe some sort of level of debt to Chuck Berry. It's just, there's no way. I mean, unless you're playing classical music and you're not doing any violin chunka chunkas or cello chunka chunkas or French horn chunka chunkas, you know, you owe a debt in some way, shape, or form to Chuck Berry. So the reason I say that, I was sort of reminded of how innovative this gentleman was when I saw I've seen it before, but I saw a rebroadcasting of Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, which is a celebration of Chuck Berry's 60th birthday. It's sort of a concert of video of some of the concert and some of the artists that participated in that. And the making of it, and a little bit of Chuck's life. So if any of you folks out there get a chance to see that, I think you'll be really impressed with the level of detail that's on there, and also a lot of the artists, because he's got everybody from Keith Richards, who helps put this thing on, one of the primary instigators of this, to Julian Lennon, to Eric Clapton, to Robert Cray. I mean, just... You know, just buku a talent on that show. There's just no end of the folks coming on there. Linda Ronstadt, for God's sake. I mean, even, you know, even the Beach Boys have used Chuck Berry's, shall I say, actually, sort of borrowed without documentation back in the day. You know, a Surfin' USA song, which is a very Chuck Berry influenced, if not Chuck Berry copied piece. So, and I'm not slamming anybody, I'm really not. I'm just saying that, you know, to point out this man's influence is amazing. And the fact that he made it and stuck through it despite numerous, problems with the majority population at the time, the majority society at the time, which of course were, you know, predominantly Caucasian folks such as myself. And, you know, through perseverance and not taking no for an answer and believing in himself and his music, this is a man who has persevered. You know, and that's really why I bring him up tonight for a couple of reasons. So for those of you who are not aware of the debt you owe to Chuck Berry, if you're a rock and roller or a rocker or even a heavy metaler, you know, AC/DC's The Jack, for example, is definitely Chuck Berry influenced. So, not only to emphasize the man's place in rock history, but to also bring up the topic of, you know, to sort of touch on this resiliency topic, which I've talked about before, and really to more kind of segue into biases and prejudices of any number of varieties and forms. And when most people, you know, have used the term prejudicial behavior, you know, they are generally talking about the majority culture being prejudicial against some segment of the minority culture, be it, you know, as I said, homosexuals, be it women, be it blacks, be it, you know, whatever. And I think if you look through history, this is certainly by no means, and I'm really thankful for this, an American phenomena, because this stuff has been going on since day one just about. I mean, you want to look at prejudicial behavior, look at the arrogance of the Crusaders, right, which were a bunch of Christians who were going to go over to the Holy Land and retake the Holy Land from those heathen Muslims who were practicing some god-awful religion, right? Obviously, I'm being facetious. You know, it's an example of, you know, a bunch of powerful people going over and picking on people they perceive to be less powerful than themselves. And I suspect that their motives were much less honorable than spreading the word of God, all right? It has never clicked with me how you can spread the word of God by killing people, okay? So if God is love, whether it's Allah or God or Yahweh or whatever, you know, if God is love, killing people I don't think falls under that definition. It sure as heck doesn't fall into my definition of love. So, you know, all these, what I would call crazy-ass religious fanatics in whatever version of that, whether it's, you know, weirdo offshoot Branch Davidian people, or whether it's, you know, Al-Qaeda people, or whether it's whatever's, you know, to me, crazy is crazy. So if you want to get fanatic behavior, which includes killing other people because they don't believe the way you believe, that's crazy behavior in my book. And I don't care who you think's telling you to do what, you're delusional, in my personal opinion. It just never made sense to me. So, you know, if you have a majority culture in whatever country you're in, you know, if you're in an Islamic country and you're Christian, you're in the minority. You can bet your bippy you're going to catch some crap for that. You know, if you're an American living in a foreign country that is not very friendly to Americans, you're going to catch crap for that. That's a form of bias and prejudice. You know, is it unfair? Is it unjust? Probably so. But let's face it, folks, this crap has been happening since day one. Look at the history of the Jews, for example. You know, lest we forget. Look at the history of Christians who were considered to be a quote-unquote cult back in Roman times. Some of these people start talking about cults. You know what a cult really is? It's an unpopular religion with the major religious forces that are in power. So if your major religion is Islam and you're in something other than Islamic, you're in an undesirable religion. And if you're in some kind of unusual offshoot, you're considered a cult. You know, and that's really just a term for folks who are in power to put other people who are not in power down and to try to get them to conform and to label them as weird, bad, ugly, horrible, terrible, and what do all those people deserve? Castigation, death, torture, infringement of rights, yada, 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 yada. Okay, so I think you folks are getting where I'm going with this. And this has been going on since day one, right? This is nothing new, right? If you were a caveman and you belong to a different group or sect or the cave, you know, 3 miles down the road, you weren't one of us. You know, you were somehow different. And unless you were a whole lot like us, you were considered to be dangerous because you might be coming and stealing my woman or stealing my man or stealing my clubs or stealing my dinosaur meat or my grain or my water or whatever. So really what you're talking about is a fight or flight survival technique that's kind of a holdover from caveman days, right? Because if you couldn't overgeneralize in caveman days when we didn't know a whole lot about science and plant botany to differentiate poisonous mushrooms from the, oh, well, man, mushrooms from the, oh, shit, this will kill me mushroom, you were in a whole lot of trouble, all right? So you had to use this overgeneralization phenomenon, all right? So you saw a mushroom, you thought, what the heck is this stuff? You ate it, you got sick as a dog, right? Or you got, you know, delusional as a dog or whatever, and you went, no, this crap is bad. We don't want to do this crap anymore. So anything that looks like, walks like, talks like, smells like, feels like a mushroom, I'm walking around that son of a biscuit eater by at least 3 miles. Same thing with snakes, same thing with anything that could be potentially dangerous. That is a survival tool, species preservation, fight or flight tool. Well, the same stuff applies to people who we consider to be different and dangerous, right? So if you have an interaction with somebody who has longer hair than you do, or more body hair than you do, or darker skin than you do, or lighter skin than you do, or shorter hair than you do, or doesn't talk with the same accent that you do, or doesn't believe spiritually in the same stuff you believe, you know, you're a caveman, those folks might be dangerous, and you kind of want to steer clear of them, and if they come into your space, you want to get rid of those suckers. And really what we're talking about is a survival technique that was probably very helpful in the caveman days before we started really using our prefrontal lobes a lot. But we're not cave people anymore, although we sometimes act like it. We're really not cave people anymore. And while we are still animals from a phylogenetic standpoint, we're animals with a pretty big prefrontal lobe that we can use should we choose to do it. And if we don't dilute it with a crap ton of sugar and hydrogenated fat, and, oh, well, man, mushrooms and other substances, you know. But I digress. I talked about addictions and sugar on other podcasts, so any of you who are interested, you can go back and hear me bitch, whine, and moan and carry on an extensive tirade about all the crap that they put in our food and how it's making us dumber and crazier and sicker and yada, 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 and how the most dangerous drug in the planet, in the world, is sugar in its refined form because it causes all kinds of medical repercussions and premature aging, blah, blah, blah. Much worse than any other drug that we consider to be illegal, and second most dangerous drug are cigarettes, right? So don't think of drugs as, you know, illicit substances. From a biochemical standpoint, they're whatever you put in your body. They're whatever affects your brain, your blood pressure, your kidneys, your liver, whatever. So protein, water, sugar, wheat, flour, cannabis, Xanax, right? Whatever. Chlorophyll, whatever. So good drugs, bad drugs. I've talked about this before. I'm not going to waste your time. But my point being, you know, you can't even make a comment that all quote-unquote drugs are bad, even drugs that are normally good, right? So the example I often use is penicillin, right? You want to use a generic rule of thumb. Okay, well, penicillin is really good. Well, whatever if you're some poor son of a bitch like me that's allergic to penicillin that gets auditory, visual, tactile, olfactory hallucinations? Yeah, it's not such a good drug. Now, if you're a normal person, which everybody by now who's been listening to these knows god dog well I'm not, you know, it's a great drug if you have some infectious disease, that bacterial infection that penicillin works great on. It's a fabulous drug, right? But for me, it stinks. So whether something's good or not, you can't just overgeneralize it, right? Something's good in a specific amount of quantity, right? So a little deviation from the norm in our society might be a positive thing, or if you can channel the deviation in a way that makes sense, you can make something of your life. But, you know, all of this requires that nasty four-letter word, work, which you folks have heard me use probably on each and every podcast I've ever done since day one, because, as I told to one of my colleagues today, there is no way around it, okay? You can't muck with Mother Nature. You can't muck with the rules in the universe, right? We have to follow it. Plants have to follow it. Angels have to follow it. Demons have to follow it. You know, there are rules, people. We all are subject to some kind of rules unless you're God, okay? And if you've ever run into a narcissist or borderline, they sometimes act like they're God, but we know they're not, okay? So, just saying. So all of these overgeneralizations, all of these, all black people are bad, all white people are bad, all Native Americans are bad, you know, all, you know, Asians are bad, you know, all of these people are bad, you know, we even have these nice little terms that we like to group everybody, you know, under. And you all know what they are, so I don't need to repeat them on here, but whatever, you know, little colloquialism you use for a group of folks, and I'll use my own group as an example. So, you know, whether you want to call people, you know, Caucasians, Caucasians, or crackers, or honkies, you know, or Southern people, and I am Southern, so I can make fun of us, right? Rednecks, or country people, there's a difference, right? Or Southerners, or down-home folks, right? Notice all of those conjure different mental images, okay? They're an attempt to try to box people and understand people, and it's great if you want to kind of get a general idea. Well, somebody's from the South, I'm going to call them a redneck, or I'm going to call them a country bumpkin, or I'm going to call them a rube, or a briar, or whatever your, you know, politically incorrect term is for your area. But the reality is, no two Southerners are the same, no two Yankees are the same, right? No two black folks are the same, or white folks, or Native Americans, or whatever. And the way that we get these prejudices is a holdover, because we interact with one or two folks that aren't like us, and oh my Jesus, you know, Hail Mary, Buddha, Satan, whatever, you know, we got to do something about that stuff. And maybe we had a bad interaction with somebody with long hair at one time, and so now every time we see somebody with long hair, we think all of those folks are going to be hippies, drug addicts, crazy asses, rebel rousers, Satanists, whatever, fill in the blank, whatever your misconception is. In my case, iconoclasts and weirdo are the only two that actually fit. I am not, nor have I ever been a Satanist, and as most of you know, I am not, nor have ever been a drug addict or even substance in the most common use of the term substance, as in illicit substances, illegal substances, abuser ever. And most of you know I've never been drunk even, much less anything else. I'm a nerd. Okay? I'm a nerd with hair. I'm a Southern boy nerd with hair, y'all. So, you know, whatever. Right. So I'm kind of I'm an iconoclast, and I'm a weirdo, and if you don't think I catch shit for that, you are delusional, right? Every flipping day, just about, I get looks from people, even from people in my own profession. They, you know, you look at the hair, and I know what they're thinking. You can read it on their face, right? You see parents coming into my office looking at the hair going, oh my frickin' Jesus. Now, most of them are nice enough not to say anything, but you know, when their mouths are hitting the floor and their eyes are big as, you know, UFO saucers, it's pretty obvious what they're thinking. And again, all of those come out of fear. All of those come out of ignorance and, in some regard, a holdover. It's a genetic holdover from the caveman days. It's a fight or flight thing, right? Now, how do we know these folks might be farly dangerous, to quote a line from Charlie Daniels' song? You know, how do we know these things might be dangerous, might be hazardous? We might be on the lookout, have to be on the lookout for them. Which, by the way, which is why all, like, criminals, particularly the career criminals and the antisocials and, you know, the rapists and the child molesters and the CEOs of companies and presidents of the United States and other political figures who look really pretty boy or pretty girl or look socially appropriate like one of the crowd, that's how they get away with that crap, because the reverse of that's also true, right? Let us never forget that prejudices and biases and overgeneralizations run in both directions. So if you're Mr. Pretty Boy or Pretty Girl, everybody thinks you're sweet, lovable, more intelligent than you really are, that you're this normal Joe or Jolene, you know, you're part of Leave It to Beaver and Father Knows Best and, you know, sunshine and watermelons and American flags if you're from the South, you know, and most of you know that's how a lot of criminals get away with their stuff for so long, because it's the generalized perception, oh, these people look harmless, oh yeah, this guy hadn't shaved in 3 days and his hair is down to his patooties, we got to watch out for him. or her or whatever. So that's how this crap gets started. And criminals know this. That's how they get away with it. Smart criminals know this shit, right? That's how they get away with their stuff for so doggone long, because they are smart enough and they've learned the rules of engagement. They've learned not how to attract a shitload of attention to themselves in a negative sort of way, right? But this is how this happens. So you have an interaction with somebody. You see a newscast. You do observational learning, also known as role modeling, right? Also known as vicarious conditioning. So you see the newscast, and you see a Muslim person on TV or a Middle Eastern-looking person, and you can't tell whether they're Iranian, Iraqi, you know, Arab, you know, Jewish person from Jerusalem, some kind of Middle Eastern whatevers. They're just kind of, you know, Arab-y looking, I'm going to, you know, as one of my friends might say, you know, they are Arab fuckers. And no offense to Arabians when I say that. That's just, that's my friend being inaccurate and somewhat inappropriate. You know, if somebody looks Arabic-esque, right, Middle Eastern-esque, right, and all of a sudden, oh my God, they might be a terrorist, they might be this, they might be that. Well, you know, I can say I have never met a sane Muslim or a sane person who is of the Islamic faith who thought any of those people had a brain in their head bigger than a pea and had any morals bigger than the size of an ant brain. Because nobody of any responsible religious or ethnic or racial group is going to think crazy people in their group are okay folks and that they're somehow the great representational figure for their group. Most of these people cringe when shit like this happens. Just like anytime I see a white guy doing crazy stuff to black people, I'm like, oh great, here we got another one. Just more ammunition for non-white people to go see all those, especially if they're from the South, right? It's like, okay, well, so we got another of these cracker boys. You know, it's like, oh my Jesus God, could you please just like use shoe polish, you know, and get rid of the Southern accent and pretend, you know, get a British accent, get a Canadian accent, eh? You know, do something to quit drawing attention to us Southerners who aren't like that, okay? Please, I have enough trouble as it is. But, you know, it's how this crap starts. And then you preach this stuff to your kids. If you're a parent, you grow your kids up because you really believe that stuff. You know, all these supremacists, whether they're black supremacists or white supremacists or American supremacists or French supremacists or whatever, all these people are preaching this crap to their kids from way young. Right. All you have to do is look at some of these crazy people, where they come from, that commit these crimes against, I'm going to call it humanity. Right. And I don't care who it's against. If you do something bad against somebody, I don't care if it's racial or ethnic or sexual preferency or religious. I don't care what it is. It's an affront to humanity. So if you do this stuff by somebody, you can bet your bippy that a lot of these folks grew up in a very intolerant, very, you know, overgeneralized home that taught their kids this stuff. Right. And if you happen to be the unfortunate person who's born into a majority culture and who is of a minority, whether it's, you know, or you're a person who's trying to break into a predominantly majority occupation, and you don't belong to the right group. For example, females, when they first tried to get into politics, and they still run into some of that, or females who are trying to get into positions that are traditionally held by males, like physicians back in the day. I mean, I'm ashamed to say this, but when I was a little kid, my mom had a female physician who was a gynecologist. And I kept saying to my mom, how can she be a doctor? It's a her. It's a woman. Women can't be doctors. You know, I was like 4 years old, which shows you how much I knew at 4 years old, but I digress. You know, but it's the attitude a lot of people have of, oh, this person can't be this because they are fill in the blank, right? Well, no. Or this person has to be this because they are fill in the blank. Well, no. Right? Now, I'm not going to tell you listeners out there that I'm the perfect non-prejudicial, non-biased kind of guy, because I'd be a lying son of a biscuit eater, or I'd be delusional as hell. Right? I have my moments. Right? There are folks who I see and my initial knee-jerk reaction is, oh, here we go. Right? And I have to kind of bitch smack myself and go, dude, you need to put a lid on that crap. That stuff that you bought from your parents, or that stuff you bought from your societal you grew up in or whatever, why don't you put a lid on that crap and get to know this person before you start raving and ranting inside and having a hissy fit, okay? And the good news is, and I'm very proud to say this, most of the time I can put a lid on my id and go, shut up, why don't you get to know this person before you start grouping, oh, he's one of them, or she's one of them, or they're one of, or whatever the heck, right? It's just as dumb when I do it. So it's even dumber when I do it because I know better. I don't have an excuse, okay? So it's just, you know, we have got to start remembering that all of this comes out of learning that we learned from someplace. Our parents, our faith, some of us belong to some crazy religions out there. No offense to anybody when I say that, but that's true. Some of us belong to, you know, some crazy subcultures out there that practice all kinds of crazy crap. And we send it off to our kids. We, you know, contaminate our kids. You know, the sins of the fathers are plagued onto the kids. You know, hint, hint, nudge, nudge. Right? That's not what they're not talking about that in the real sense. They're talking about this kind of crap. Right? So what I say to people is, if you are a member of a minority and you're getting zapped upon by a majority, best thing you can do is to hold your ground and do what you do best to respond, to do exactly what Chuck Berry did, right, in a sense. Now, I'm not saying he didn't do some stuff that got himself into a lot of trouble because he's got an attitude or whatever. And I'm not slamming the man. I'm really, really not, because if the crap happened to me that happened to him, I'd probably have an attitude too, okay? So I'm just saying. But the best thing you can do is to keep going and not let anybody stop you. And there are zillions of examples out there of people who have become resilient, who have, you know, beat the odds, who have said, screw you, I'm going to make it regardless whether I'm born, you know, with no legs, or whether I'm born black in a predominantly white society, or whether I'm born, you know, from American parents living over in Japan, or whatever. They have overcome the odds to do great things, but you have to really work it. You have to keep your focus. You have to keep your sanity about you. You've got to keep your goals in mind and work towards them. Do not let people stop you. You know, what I say to myself is, somebody tells me I can't do it, what that usually does is put a fire under my patootie to make me want to do it more. When somebody tries to say, oh, you're this, that, and the other, unless they're right, in which case I acknowledge it, I go out of my way to prove them wrong. And the way to prove them wrong is not to say F you. The way to prove them wrong is not to beat the crap out of them. The way to prove them wrong is not to get yourself thrown in jail or burn their school down or, you know, kidnap their kids or torture their wife or rape their son or whatever, okay? This is not the way to make headlines or put, you know, send bombs in the mail to people. Right, that's only going to prove what a nutcase you are, and everybody's going to say, "See that crazy ass southern white boy, long haired, you know, weirdo. You can't trust any of those guys." Well, now what I've done is I've not only screwed it up for myself, I've screwed it up for anybody who wants to be different in any manner, kind of like me. Because now people are going, "Hey, remember that crazy ass guy that was here who, you know, blew up the White House, or, you know, let the ants loose in the Pillsbury dough factory, you know, whatever." You know, you're screwing it up for everybody. You need to have a little bit more moral responsibility to your kind, whatever that is, and, you know, have some sympathy for folks who are trying to make it the right way. And, you know, let's not forget the fact that you have a responsibility to society and to your human fellow men and women to not, you know, do crazy shit to them, because that's not cool either. So, you know, I think all of us need to think about this kind of stuff, so that if you're a member of one of these minorities, whatever it is, religious, racial, ethnic, sexual preference, gender, depending on what profession you're in or country, whatever, right? Just do your thing and don't let anybody stop you, as long as your thing doesn't get in the way of somebody else's thing doing their thing, and as long as you're not doing something antisocial and awful and terrible and castigatory. It's going to give any of the people in the majority culture room to criticize you, and everybody that is even vaguely like you, or get yourself into trouble either. And for those of us, which just about is everybody listening to this podcast, because let's face it, all of us at some level, at some time in our lives, have been or are currently biased about something. All right, I don't care if it's people, animals, you know, politics, whatever. And we all think we have great reasons to be the way we are. And what I would say is, in whatever you believe in religiously or politically or whatever, you know, more power to you. But don't step on somebody else's parade. And if you're judging somebody based on their sex or their gender or their sexual preference or their ethnic or racial background or their age, oh my God, we live in an ageist society like crazy. I mean, I see all these ads for these guys that want to join rock bands, nobody over 30. Have you ever looked at Keith Richards? Have you ever looked at Geddy Lee? Have you looked at Jimmy Page? Those guys can still play, right? Jack Bruce, just saying. You know, now you're going to say, well, yeah, but they've been playing since they were 19, 15, 12, whatever. Well, they got lucky, you know. But for us, you know, old farts who are over 30, you know, speaking of myself, you know what? I got a lot of life left in me, and I know you guys and gals out there in listener land can't tell because of the crappy way that I'm recording this thing, but I'm a really good musician, and I can hold my own with a lot of them. So, you know, these people that want to say, oh, well, we don't want anybody over 30 in our band, or we don't want this, or we don't want that, or these record companies that want to hire these, you know, baby boomer, you know, 5-year-olds who want to sign the record contracts or whatever. Screw you. No offense, but screw you. You're dumbasses, right? Because the people who've made it in music are the people who are still making it, who made it back in the day. People like Boston, people like Clapton, people like Aerosmith, people like The Stones, people like Rush, right? These are your long-haul people, not these one-band, one-hit wonders. You know, and no offense to any of the one-hit wonders out there, because more power to you if you made money off your song and you're living off the royalties of the song, more power to you. I mean, and I mean that. But, you know, I know the music business has the business end of it, and I get that, but you can drive the public perception by stop making the public think that people that look like they're 5 years old or 10 years old or 15 years old are the only people that are worth signing and worth and good musicians and only people that should be on stage making money. Because that's a form of ageism, which, of course, is biased, which is just as bad as saying, you know, no blacks allowed or no gays allowed or no Americans allowed or no, you know, people over 5'7" allowed. Shame on you. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And most biases and prejudices are. And that's what I'm trying to get you guys and gals out there in listener land to see. Whatever your thing is, you know, start examining it. Start asking yourself, how reality-based is your bias and is your prejudice? And if it's irrational, if you can't find, you know, you can't get a sample size of 3 and go, okay, well, I interacted with 3 straight guys, so all straight people are assholes. No, I'm sorry, that doesn't work. You know, you didn't do a scientific study. You didn't have a control sample. Your sample size, your N, is too low to make any generalizations to anybody. So, you know, you may want to go back to the research drawing board again and talk to somebody who knows how to do research before you start making all these stupid leaps of faith because you based it on 3 people or 5 people or 20 people. Okay, you need a boatload more people for who you can say everybody that's this way is going to act like this or be like this or bad or good or whatever. Same thing with good stuff, right? You got to look at the, you know, 4 out of 5 dentists use Crest toothpaste. Or 4 to 5 dentists use Chuck Q. Farley toothpaste. How do you know the Chuck Q. Farley Corporation didn't pay the dentist to say that shit? How do you know they didn't pick 5 dentists, 4 of whom they knew were going to say that Chuck Q. Farley toothpaste was the best thing since sliced bread? Come on, people. Use some common sense here. You know, ads are meant to sell stuff. They're not, and they're made to unduly influence you so you spend your money. Right? You know what? We come to these irrational conclusions about people and things and nations and political figures and whatever in the same manner. Let's start asking ourselves what's really going on here. You know, and if the problem, as Shakespeare would say, the problem, dear Brutus, lies not in our stars but in ourselves, then we need to start looking inside to fix what's wrong with us. Because if you're focused trying to fix a group, whether they're white, black, green, blue, male, female, what the hell ever, you need to be fixing your own crap. Most of us are too quick, including myself, to point fingers at other people when we got a shit ton of fingers pointed back at ourselves while we're making the one finger pointed at whatever it is we're pissed off about or upset about or angry with or whatever. You know, every one of us has his or her own stuff that we can be dealing with. and there's not enough hours in the day to go to work and do our thing and pay our taxes and work on ourselves too. There's just not enough room. So stop focusing on everybody else. Stop being a jerk and making fun of other people and being biased and prejudiced against other people, whether it's positive or negative, and making your group that you represent look like dumbasses and yourself, and limiting your life, because you never know when one of these things is going to, you know, turn into, wow, I kind of like this. I mean, I can't tell you how many people come into my office trying to get better eating habits. I mean, this is a really good example. And people go, oh, I don't like broccoli. Well, when's the last time you tried broccoli? Oh, I don't know. I was about 4 years old. Okay, so you're a 40-year-old guy who hasn't tried broccoli since you were four? Are you kidding me? How did you have it? One of my mom cooked it, and it really was awful. Well, was your mom a good cook? She could cook a couple of things. Most of the stuff she cooked tasted like ass. Oh, well then, there's your problem. So have you ever had broccoli fixed, quote-unquote, the right way? Have you fixed it this way? Have you tried to change the texture? Is it a texture issue? Is it a flavor issue? You just don't like the word broccoli. I mean, I don't laugh, people, because I was talking to somebody's house help one day, and I was saying to this person, you know, I was talking with my buddy, and the housekeeper was doing cleaning her thing, and I was talking to my buddy about making she crab soup, which I love to make, and I love seafood anyway. And this housekeeper made a face, and I said, oh, you don't like she crab soup? And the housekeeper goes, oh, no, I don't eat crab. Oh, my God. I said, dude, would you get sick off crab or something one time? You know, which is obviously a fight or flight mushroom thing. Remember the mushroom story, right? So she goes, no, I just don't like the word crab. I mean, my jaw was on the floor. And I'm like, what? She goes, yeah, I just don't like that word crab. It doesn't sound good. You know what I'm thinking? And mozzarella cheese sounds good. I mean, come on. I couldn't believe it. The true story, people. I'm not kidding. True story. Swear to God. True story. Right? And so the broccoli guy goes, yeah, I hadn't had broccoli sauce 4 years old. How'd your mom make it? I don't know. She threw it in a pot and boiled it to death. Oh, yeah, great. Oh, of course. Your mom was a gourmet cook. Got it. So, you know, why don't you go to the food, you know, once you Google Food Channel or Food Network or Cooking Channel or, you know, Betty Crocker or, you know, Love Cooking, you know, on Google and look up some broccoli recipes and look at some shit that looks good to you, like, you know, broccoli and cheese or, you know, broccoli, you know, salad with, you know, blueberry vinaigrette dressing or something. I mean, come on. It just amazes me. Well, I haven't tried it since I'm 4 years old. Well, no use to start now. I mean, you know, you're 35 pounds overweight, and you're borderline diabetic, and you know, yada yada. You guys know the story, I'm sure, and you gals do too, right? So many of us hold on to these irrational belief systems, and as if they're, you know, fact, as if God came down and, you know, carved out another "Thou shalt not eat broccoli," you know. Thou shalt not like Americans in Japan, you know. Thou shalt not like Islamic people. I mean, come on. So we just need to get over ourselves. We need to realize that most of our biases and prejudices are based usually on only one or two or three bad incidences. Either we heard about them, we saw them on TV, we read about them, and you know, on the newspaper, or you know, somebody raised us to believe that they were bad or good or whatever, and you know. Sugar's not that bad. Oh, sugar. Your body doesn't know that. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And let me know when Elvis gets here too, okay? He's probably having lunch with Hitler. So, come on, people. You know, break through the myths. Challenge your belief systems. Ask yourselves, how many people have you really interacted that are whatever? Right? And a lot of times if you interact with people who are poor examples of their group, whatever their group happens to be, it's probably not due to the color of their skin or their sex or their age or their weight or their region of the country or their religious views or their countries of origins or their sexual habits or lack thereof or whatever. It's usually due to something else. You know, whether it's poverty and they didn't have an education, or you know, they were raised in an orphanage, you know, with a guy who believed that anybody over 30 was bad and you should, you know, whatever. So get to know some of these folks. If you have a food aversion or whatever, ask yourself, when's the last time you tried it? And did you have it at, you know, one of these fast food places, or did you have it from somebody's mom or dad who couldn't cook worth two beans? And, you know, have you had it the right way, quote unquote? Have you tried it different ways? I mean, there are so many opportunities that we keep ourselves from, and really we limit our lives doing that. And even more than that, we put out a bad role model for everybody else that we know. Excuse me, my recorder dilly got funky. It is going to judge us based on our behavior and everybody that's like us. So my rule of today is, if you belong to a group of folks who are demonized for whatever reason, be better than that. Rise above them. And if you grew up believing a bunch of stupid ideas, whether it's food or how great sugar is for you, it's not going to hurt you, or how bad one group of folks are versus another group, challenge your belief systems. And if you're a victim of one of these things, stand up for your belief systems. Don't back down. You know, pull the Tom Petty, I won't back down, right? And if your stuff's not uber, you know, you're not Charles Manson trying to, you know, kill everybody and start a war here. You know, I'm not talking about those folks, but, you know, people who are, you know, relatively sane given the definition of our times, you know, and you just happen to belong to an unpopular group of folks, stand your ground. Work around, find workarounds. Develop the resiliency that people like B.B. King and people like Chuck Berry and a boatload of other people I could mention, you know, overcame in order to be great and to be themselves. And you don't have to be in the history books. You don't have to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You don't have to, you know, be anywhere. Just surviving and producing and thriving in your best way you possibly can is the best statement you can make for yourself and for everybody who is like you and for other people to follow as a role model. And maybe if you do that, the idiots who are against you for whatever reason will kind of go, you know, maybe I need to rethink my position on that. And if that's the case, woohoo for both of you. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll try not to be so slack about getting one of these out again. I apologize again, and I appreciate everybody who's hung in there with me. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. And keep on listening to whatever music you like, and never forget our pioneers, because without them, we wouldn't be where we are today. Thanks. Be safe and happy always.